Let's call this meeting to order. House Special Committee on Economic Development, Trade, and Tourism. Let the record reflect that it is 10:21 and Thursday, the 19th of January. Present this morning, Representative Gardner, Representative Thompson, Representative Munoz, myself, Bob Heron, Representative Olson, Representative Keller, and Representative Noam Foster. There you go. Anyway, if you have a cell phone, please silence it, and we'll begin this morning. Today, Arctic Caucus update. We have some VIPs from our neighbors to the east, and we have some Penoir friends from snowy Seattle. Welcome. For you, you have to members, we have, of course, the agenda, the Penoir Capital Visit Delegation, the Penoir Arctic Caucus Proceedings, a draft Penoir letter to Secretary Clinton regarding the Arctic Council, a draft Penoir letter to USARC and the Canadian Polar Commission, and we'll have a report from Larry Dietrich of DEC. Now, of course, we have a busy schedule with lots of speakers and presenters today, but it's my pleasure and honor to ask the founding mother of Arctic Caucus to come forward, Senator Lisa McGuire, and she'll give us a background and an introduction to our guests. Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee here. Thank you so much for taking time to welcome our distinguished guests that have traveled so far, and as you pointed out, some of them through more snow than we have here, to bring us greetings and to make their annual visit with us. PENWAR stands for the Pacific Northwest Economic Region, for those that are watching and may not know all of the acronyms that we throw out so easily. It's a group that has been in existence now for going on 22 years, founded by two gentlemen who got together and decided that Canada and the United States had a lot more in common than they had apart, and that it was time that we put an organization together to come together every year and focus on what those common goals were. And to that end, member jurisdictions began to join, and as you can see on the map, it's largely made up of states in the Pacific Northwest, territories and provinces in the Pacific Northwest of Canada. Our newest member is that of the Northwest Territories, and we do have a member here, the Honorable David Ramsey, who will come up before you today from the Northwest Territories as well to talk to you about it. And the Honorable McLeod, Minister McLeod, who was here last year, is now the premier of the Northwest Territories. So our ties with that territory continue to grow and are nurtured through our relationship with PENWAR. When I served as president of PENWAR, I had a vision for a couple of things. The gas line was moving forward at that time, and one of my goals was to start a registry for workforce development between the, Canada and the United States. What we found was that there were large infrastructure projects going on, whether they were hydro projects or gas line projects, that Canada was having to outsource and look to India in some cases. For workers, and in some cases in the United States, we were looking to workers when, in fact, there were highly trained workers across the border in Canada. And that was one of the things that we put into place and are still working on. As we know, the bottom fell out on the price of gas because of the shale glut. And so the gas line itself, both the Mackenzie Delta line and the larger line to the lower 48, sort of fell by the wayside. And so that project is on standby, but the project that did move forward and has had tremendous success is was my creation of the Arctic Caucus, and I'm very proud to have joined efforts with you, Mr. Chairman, who has really taken the lead here in the House, and I want to thank you very much for that leadership. It's an uncommon thing to have somebody just pick it up and roll with it. There are others here, like Berta Gardner, who have attended meetings throughout, and I want to thank you as well for all of that. work that you have done throughout the past in this committee's work, but you in particular, Mr. Chairman, have seen the vision that I had and have carried it through in the form of the House Joint Resolution Number 15 last year, which you introduced in the first week, and it was one of the first pieces of legislation that this body actually got all the way through to the governor. So I want to thank you for that. The vision behind it, as I looked at PennWare and could see that this innovative organization was reaching across borders and looking at resource development, transportation hubs, intermodal growth, there was one place that was missing, and that was the Arctic. And what an opportunity for Alaska, the Northwest Territories, and the Yukon in particular, as the bordering territories and states in PennWare, to form a formal part of PennWare and focus our efforts on what the needs were as that area of our world continues to grow, knowing that China was already looking at it, Russia certainly was already looking at it, and the United States, frankly, I think has had a lack of leadership and a failure to sort of embrace our status as an Arctic nation. So this was my effort at kind of pushing our agenda forward and putting Alaska and Northwest Territories and the Yukon into the driver's seat. So to that end, we have held meetings in Barrow in December of last year, which was, I think, a real wake-up call for those who had never been to the Arctic. To come in December was eye-opening for people to see what it was like for Arctic people to live in total darkness, in the cold, the challenges of certainly heat, water, electricity, all those things. We talked about infrastructure mainly. We had some fantastic presentations, in particular from Ed Page, who showed us the potential to do marine vessel tracking in the Arctic. And as we look at icebreakers and the need to get out and really monitor the Arctic, there's a lot more that we need to do as well, and part of that is that vessel tracking. We know that once the Arctic opens up and the Northwest Passage opens up in earnest, there will be all kinds of traffic that's moving back and forth, and we need to monitor that. We then went on in 2011 to Yellowknife and held a meeting there, which was fantastic. It was a beautiful place. Our hosts were amazing to us. We got to see the sites and the capital. The capital there in Yellowknife is fantastic. The culture, there are so many similarities between Alaska and the Northwest Territories. I think that was amazing to see as well. We moved further on our goals, and I think what really came together in the Northwest Territories was the realization that the Arctic Council will be chairing will have the chairmanship under North America, the United States, and Canada from 2013 to 2017 for the first time in many years coming up. And so the realization is there that we have a leadership opportunity. Inserting ourselves in now is a great time. At the state and provincial level, we can set out the goals, the things that we think are important, and hopefully dovetail into those larger global goals that will be set between 2013 and 2017. Canada will take it first, and then the United States, but we hope that we can acquire observer status and be a part of those discussions as they move through. I want to say thank you as well, as I sit here, to the Lieutenant Governor. He's not here in the room, but Mead Treadwell behind the scenes has been a tremendous partner to me and to PennWare, having been a part of all of the Arctic dialogue for over two decades. He has linked me up to a lot of the people who make those inside decisions, connected me to those folks, and frankly, when he came back from Nuut, was able to help me craft policy goals that reflected the policy goals from Nuut so that we could align them. And so I want to say thank you to him and let you know that as we move forward here in Alaska and in PennWare, that's our goal, is that we're not going to try and sort of be on our own island and come up with a series of of goals that we think are important, never mind the rest of the Arctic and never mind the rest of the world, but rather ones that we think are important. I want to, before I introduce the delegation and then let them speak, I want to just highlight a Northern Vision. This is a document that comes from people who are a little bit ahead of our time. The Yukon government, Northwest Territories, and Nunavut actually came together in 2007 to create a document much like what I'm discussing here for PennWare in our Arctic Caucus. And I want to clarify that we've had these two meetings. We're going to have another one coming up in Whitehorse. That will be our third official meeting. To that end, we have HJR 15 and a series of other documents and goals, but we don't yet have a document like they have, a vision, if you will, a PennWare Arctic Caucus vision. My hope is that we'll have one by the end of Whitehorse. That is my dream, that we will have a vision that guides us, all of our communities, as we move forward. And I just wanted to read for you a few of the tenets from this document created in 2007. It says, we're committed to building a North where self-reliant individuals live in healthy, viable communities, where Aboriginal rights have been successfully negotiated and implemented, where Northerners are the primary beneficiaries of Northern resource development, where Northern traditions of respect for the land and the environment are cherished, where strong, responsive governments make decisions and take actions that are anchored in the principles of responsible, sustainable development, where the cultural heritage of Aboriginal people is preserved, promoted, and able to flourish, and where all citizens celebrate their diversity, where Northern governments have the tools and authority they need to manage their own affairs, and finally, where the territories are strong, contributing partners in a dynamic and secure Canadian Federation. And I think if you were to broaden that out and envision an Alaska sitting alongside that with respect to our federal government, that again, really, I think truly hasn't embraced the fact that we're an Arctic nation, you could extrapolate out what we might want to say about our northern people, our northern culture, and our desire to be a jurisdiction that's recognized for its own rights. With that, I just want to introduce the delegation that's here today and let them talk. You guys hear me enough. Let me introduce them, and maybe they could stand. As I introduce them, the Honorable Curry Dixon, who's the Minister of Economic Development for the Government of the Yukon, the Honorable David Ramsey, Minister of Industry, Tourism, and Investment for the Government of Northwest Territories, MLA George Greenveld, he is a member of the Legislative Assembly in Alberta, and we have Colin Smith, who's the past President of APEGA, he's one of our private sector members. And then we have Abigail Enghorst, who's a Deputy Director of the Institute of the North, Abigail. And Peter Taylor, who's our new Consulate of Canada here in Anchorage. Welcome, Peter. And finally, Matt Morrison, who's the Executive Director of PennWare. So please, if we could give him a round of applause.
Thank you, Senator. And a little housekeeping. Debbie, the Honorable Chris Tuck has showed up at 10:25.
Thank you.
Good morning. Matt, you're first up. And please, before you begin your presentation, if you could introduce your staff.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Very happy to be here. I'm Matt Morrison, Executive Director of the Pacific Northwest Economic Region from snowy Seattle. I have with me Steve Meyer, who is our lead staff on the Arctic Caucus, and he's also from Seattle.
All right.
So thank you very much for this opportunity to present, and thank you so much, this committee, for your leadership in trusting PennWare to embark on what I think will be a long-term and sustainable effort to articulate the goals and a vision of the North to our federal government. And I have to say, we just came in December from Ottawa, and it's so refreshing to see a prime minister who really does care about the Arctic. He makes a point of going to the Arctic every year to different communities. And of course, I think there's a real opportunity with the bringing the territories in Alaska together that we can have more impact in Washington, D.C. on a pan-Arctic agenda. And I think that it's also notable that the number one issue for the Prime Minister of Canada is his relationship with the United States. And in that context, the Arctic plays an important role. And so I think that as we look at the northern vision that you have before you from the territories, and as you begin, you know, the terrific work, I do want to say to Representative Jewell and Representative Herron and your whole committee that the Northern Waters Task Force, just an exceptional piece of work and a wonderful opportunity to look at the issues that Alaska really should be the leader in the United States at addressing. And I think the opportunity of building these ties with Yukon and Northwest Territories on crafting an Arctic vision that Alaska can really lead the United States in presenting to the Arctic Council is very important. And so I think that it is a, you know, I really commend Senator McGuire when she first came up with this idea. Our board was kind of scratching their heads and say, well, okay, what's this all about? But it's just phenomenal, and the connections that all of the states are seeing for the first time with the Arctic. I mean, as a result of the Arctic Caucus, you know, we're going to have a whole group tour the Polar Star and the Polar Sea in the Seattle Harbor. They're just sitting there in dry dock next month. Alberta is the gateway to Northwest Territories. So we're pulling in the rest of the states to understand the Arctic issues, which I think is very important and significant in terms of how we work toward being a leadership voice in Washington, D.C. for Arctic policy. So I did want to call your attention to, I think in your packet, we are planning an event on March 8th. That is the day that the Energy Council begins in the evening in Washington, D.C. We're planning to invite the U.S. State Department and our U.S. Federal delegation to a briefing from the Arctic Caucus. And I think this will be a good opportunity, as Senator McGuire mentioned, we are hoping to call for Canada and the United States to begin discussing what issues should be part of a 2013 to 2017 agenda priorities for the Arctic Council, which is all eight nations. But when Canada takes the leadership of the Arctic Council in 2013 to 2015, and then the U.S. follows 2015 to 2017. So we think the timing is just right for us to be saying we should be looking together as the nation of Denmark, Sweden, and Finland did when they took the leadership of the Arctic Council and looked at a six-year time slot instead of just 2 years. I also would like to report that we had a meeting in Anchorage in September where Fran Ulmer attended the meeting, and we talked about the linkage between the U.S. Arctic Research Commission and its counterpart in Canada. And for the first time, they're going to be meeting together in April in Montreal, and we've asked to be able to present to those two groups at that time. So there's I think, a great opportunity and synergy that's happening here, and I really commend the committee for your vision and support. And there are 16 specific action items that we're moving forward with the Arctic Caucus. You have them in this piece in your packet, and I think rather than me talk about them, I'd like to bring up our co-chair of the Arctic Caucus from Northwest Territories. And before I do, those of you who are in Yellowknife and you saw the circular table and the caucus, the way Yellowknife does their government, just in one sentence, they just elected 19 members. The 19 members all together decided what their goals were for the next 4 years, and after that they selected a speaker, and after that they selected a premier. And there are no parties. Everything's done by consensus. So Minister Ramsey is one of the ministers who is in a minority and acts in consensus for the Northwest Territories government. So think about that. But I'd like to yield my time to Minister Ramsey and have him talk about the Yellowknife meeting and the action items that came from Yellowknife.
Before we go to Minister Ramsey, I just wanted to share with the committee the appreciation that the Northern Wives Task Force enjoy. We want to send our appreciation. Northern Waters Task Force decided that PENWAR should see basically just a preliminary update that will be delivered to the legislature tomorrow. We presented it to PENWAR because the importance of the Arctic Caucus, the success of our Canadian neighbors in those two jurisdictions, Yukon and Northwest Territory, and Alaska, is important to the protection of our part of the world. And so PENWAR is a unique organization, as we all know, and the Northern Wildlife Task Force concurred that they would be an excellent partner for all of the jurisdictions to use as a tool to promote the welfare of the people that live in our part of the world. So I wanted to thank PENWAR personally for that.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman.
And a little bit of housekeeping is the schedule of presenters is, of course, will be the Yukon Territory, then Northwest Territory, then the Yukon, then DEC, Larry Dietrich, then we'll have Colin Smith up, and last but not least, I'll extend the privileges that our Alberta VIP, George Grenfeld, would take up the last few minutes of our meeting. So, Minister Ramsey, and could you also please introduce any staff that has come with you? If you could introduce Linda as well, please.
Thank you very much, Chairman Herron, and it's a pleasure to be here in the great state of Alaska. Pleasure to appear before your committee this morning. I'd like to introduce my executive assistant, Linda Comerford, who's joined us. Linda's from Yellowknife as well. And again, it is an honor and a privilege to be here. I've enjoyed meeting a number of old friends that I've had the opportunity to meet at other PENWAR events over the past few years. The Northwest Territories joined PENWAR in 2009. We're very happy with being a part of the PENWAR family. We're very excited at the opportunity to work with our friends in Alaska on the Arctic Caucus and in the Yukon Territory to advance interests of mutual concern for the Arctic and the regions that we call home. Before we get started, I just wanted to give you a bit of an update on the NWT election that took place on October the 3rd. Last fall, our new premier, Mr. Bob McLeod, As most of you will know, Bob, from his work with PennWire, he was a big supporter of our joining PennWire in 2009. He's now the Premier of the Northwest Territories. And as well, I was pleased to have been elected as a Cabinet Minister. I'm now the Minister of Industry, Tourism and Investment with the Government of the Northwest Territories, a position that Premier McLeod had held previous for the previous 4 years. And I'm also Minister of Transportation with the Government of the Northwest Territories. Prior to that, I served as the chairman for 4 years with the Standing Committee on Economic Development and Infrastructure, much like this committee, I suppose, would serve for the government here in Alaska. I'm confident that both the portfolios that I have responsibility for will serve me well in my work with PennWire. And recently, I was elected vice president of PennWire, an honor, and I look forward to representing the Northwest Territories in PennWire and getting the interests of not just the Northwest Territories, but our friends and neighbors in the Yukon and Alaska highlighted in my role as vice president and sometime down the road as president of PennWire. It's a great organization. We had the pleasure to host PennWire for the first time in August of 2011, and it was great to share my home community with you, and I want to again thank you for those who attended the meetings in Yellowknife. A special thanks to Representative Mike Schaffler, the PennWire president, and certainly to Senator McGuire here from Alaska, also to Reggie Jewell from Alaska, and Mr. Harvey Brooks from the Yukon. And I know Chairman Herron, you're in Yellowknife as well, so I want to thank you as well. During the Capitol visit on August 17th, members of the PennWire executive had the opportunity to participate in various activities to learn about the Northwest Territories and how our government operates. Some of these activities included a meeting with the Standing Committee on Economic Development and Infrastructure, of which I was the chair, meeting with various legislators, including former Premier Floyd Rowland and former Speaker of the House Paul DeLaurie. This was a great opportunity for you to learn about consensus government, the role of the Speaker, the role of the Standing Committees, and priorities that guided the planning of the government of the Northwest Territories. And I know Matt outlined a little bit of that for you. It is a unique government in how it works. The only other government in Canada, territorial government, that operates on a consensus style is the territory of Nunavut. So we're happy to share that style of government with our neighbors to the east, Nunavut. It's a system that does have its detractors, but certainly when you can operate in a perpetual minority and get things done, it says a lot about the people that are in the room and the effort that goes into decision-making when you're operating in that system of government. There's also participation in a business roundtable with local members of the NWT business community. This was a great opportunity to learn about any issues or concerns businesses are faced with that PennWire may be able to help with. That night culminated with a welcome reception at the Air Tindy Hangar. Attendees enjoyed the best in northern cuisine, including pan-fried lake trout and grilled buffalo ribeye steak. And I know some of you were particularly pleased to speak with Mikey from the hit TV show Ice Pilots NWT. And we like to kind of refer to ourselves as the reality show capital of Canada. We've got a number of reality shows that are filmed in the Northwest Territories. I spoke of Ice Pilots NWT. Ice Road Truckers was another one. And License to Drill also is filmed in the Northwest Territories. And most recently, we've got a dramatic TV series called Arctic Air that's filmed mostly in the Northwest Territories in Yellowknife. It premiered on CBC in Canada a week and a half ago, and it drew the most viewers of any premiere in the history of CBC, so we're very proud of that television show. And if any of you get a chance to watch it, you can watch it online at cbc.ca/arcticair, I believe is the address. And you could take that TV show, and because of the vast distances that we see in the north, take it to almost any community that's isolated and draw some comparisons to that show and some of the communities here in Alaska, to be sure. So hopefully you do get a chance to watch that.
Minister, Representative Keller is He's a pilot, and so he's probably bringing it up right now on his iPad.
Yes, and we're meeting this afternoon with Senator Olson, and I'll be sure to mention that to Senator Olson as well. I know he'd really enjoy that program, as would most people. It's a good show. The Arctic Caucus was held over the next 2 days, August 18th and 19th. We had Mayor Gordon Van Tegum and Premier McLeod welcome attendees to Yellowknife, and Representative Schaffler outlined the meeting agenda for us. Arctic infrastructure was a big topic over those 2 days and included presentations on generating electricity from Arctic natural gas and shipping that electricity south for sale, as well as the need to diversify telecommunications infrastructure in the north. Other topics and presentations included one from the Arctic Council on the role that Canada plays within the Arctic Council, search and rescue in the north, and an update from the National Energy Board on the outcomes of Arctic offshore drilling review meetings that were held in the Yukon and in the Northwest Territories. And Mr. Larry Dietrich, whom we're going to have lunch with today from Alaska, presented on oil spill planning, preparedness, and response. Mining, of course, is a huge importance to all regions, and the agenda was certainly a reflection of that. We heard presentations about the mining potential of the North, the importance of developing infrastructure to enhance development in that sector, as well as state financing programs to facilitate development in the mining sector. The first day of the caucus wrapped up with an evening out at Aurora Village, a world-class Aurora viewing facility about 15 minutes outside of Yellowknife. And again, attendees were treated to some northern cuisine and entertainment. On the second day of the Arctic Caucus, the Penwar team reviewed the Arctic Caucus terms of reference, reviewed action items developed in Portland, and also developed some new action items based on presentations in the meetings held in Yellowknife. The Arctic Caucus wrapped up with two policy tours and presentations. The first was a tour to Giant Mine Remediation Site, the Giant Mine Remediation Site located in close proximity to the city of Yellowknife, and a presentation on the City of Yellowknife's geothermal project, which the city continues to pursue with much vigor. Overall, the Yellowknife visit was a great success. 16 action items were developed for the Arctic Caucus Working Group, and we will be reviewing the status of these shortly. And hopefully I'll have the opportunity to host Penwar again in the Northwest Territories in the very near future, and certainly look forward to the summit, as I understand it, that will be taking place here in Anchorage, and I know Senator McGuire was a big push behind having the annual Penwar Summit come back to Alaska in the summer of 2013, so I look forward to coming back to Alaska then, and certainly a number of policy tours and side tours can get legislators and our private sector partners in Penwar out to the various regions of your great state so that we can see as much as we can while we're here and learn as much as we can while we're here. And I wanted to, Chairman Herron, talk a little bit about the action items, if I could now.
Please, go ahead.
If anybody had any questions on that, I'd be prepared to answer any questions as well. I'll just go into the action items.
I think that hit the high spots and the ones that have, you think that would be of interest.
Okay.
Or most important.
Okay. I'll try to keep it brief and begin with the two action items that the NWT had the lead on. Action item one was a mapping project of the Arctic Caucus region, and action item 15, the establishment of a working group to identify and share jurisdictional best practices on resource development regulatory systems. On the first item, the project has been described as to develop a joint resource inventory infrastructure an opportunity map of the Arctic Caucus region, which includes the state of Alaska, the Yukon, and Northwest Territories. This map should be interactive, shared with multiple GIS layers for infrastructure resources with links for contacts and more detailed information. While this project was led by the NWT, the project is a joint initiative supported by all three jurisdictions, as it will bring mutual benefits to all of us. This map will be a great tool that will highlight the economic potential of the North, as well as help identify current infrastructure gaps that hinder the realization of this potential. During a review of the project, the team noted it was very similar to a broader Penwar initiative led by the province of Saskatchewan. As a result, Saskatchewan was included in initial discussions on the project. This reduced the potential for effort duplication and creates the synergy needed to provide the best opportunity for success of the web mapping project. As a first step in the map development, the project team sent out a questionnaire to representatives in the Arctic Caucus jurisdictions. The input gathered from the questionnaire will help the project team create a unified vision for this initiative. Questionnaire results are now being compiled into a scoping document. This document will serve as a reference point for further discussions on the web mapping project and will also detail what information is depicted on the map, such as infrastructure, including communications, transportation, energy, resources, including renewable, non-renewable, and renewable energy. In addition, the scoping document will also define the requirements for levels of map interactivity, detail what specific information will be provided back to the users of the application, and establish project constraints. The scope document will be used to guide the final design and development of the web mapping application. It will provide essential context and direction for jurisdictions to provide data for the project. And the status is the preliminary static map has been produced, and I'm happy to share that with you here today, Chairman Herron. I welcome your feedback on the work done on this map to date, and we have the map. Probably can't get it up right now. Okay.
It broke down this morning, I guess.
All right. So we'll move to the other action item, Chairman Herron. The working group has not had an opportunity to move forward on the project of identifying and sharing jurisdictional best practices on resource development regulatory systems. Both the Yukon Territory and the Northwest Territories were in full swing of elections soon after the August Yellowknife meetings. We had a campaign period that lasted all of the month of September, then elections 1st of October. So we were constrained by time and election proceedings. However, now that the elections for the two territories are completed, we will be getting back on track with the goal to set up a panel for the White Horse meeting in the spring. Myself or one of my colleagues will be contacting the appropriate people in both Yukon and in the state of Alaska in the near future to get some movement on this action item. And Mr. Chairman, I'll call it at that. And once again, thank you very much for your great hospitality. Pleasure to be here.
I appreciate the presentation. Any questions for the minister?
I answer questions now for a living and not ask them, so it's... Oh, and sorry, my deputy minister, I should introduce my deputy minister, Peter Vissian, from Yellowknife as well, deputy minister of Industry, Tourism, and Investment.
Glad you were here, Peter.
Thanks.
Okay. Our next presenter, the Honorable Curry Dixon, Minister of Economic Development, Yukon, and Harvey Brooks, Deputy Minister. And Minister Dixon, if you have staff here, which I believe you do, could you please introduce them for the
sure committee? Thing. Thanks, Chairman. Along with me today, folks, is, of course, my Deputy Minister, Dr. Harvey Brooks, the Director of Policy and Planning for the Department of Economic Development, is Steve Rose, and my Executive Assistant, Valerie Boxall, is with us as well.
Before you begin, I just want to take say a big thank you to Steve Rose and Carl Burgess, as they were the hosts when this committee traveled to Whitehorse this summer. Outstanding job and an outstanding community, and we look forward to continuing and building upon our relationship with the Yukon.
We're very excited about it as well. So I guess by way of introduction, as you said before, my name is Curry Dixon. I'm the member of the Legislative Assembly for a riding in Whitehorse, a suburban riding within the city of Whitehorse, the capital of Yukon. As such, I'm also the Minister of Economic Development for the territory and the Minister of Environment. So I've got a few different hats. In our system, we are committed to do that. Now, I wanted to, before I get started, paint a bit of a picture for your understanding of the Yukon and where we've come from, and how we got here, and where we see going forward a little bit, and how we can work together. When the party with which I belong to came to power in 2002, we'd had, prior to that, consecutive years of economic decline. We had no operating mines. Our exploration in the mineral sectors was minimal. I think it was about $6 million a year. Double-digit unemployment, a generally pretty negative economy. Here we are about 10 years later. We've entered our third consecutive majority government. This is my first go-around, but the party has been to which I belong has been in there for about 10 years now. This year we had over $300 million in exploration expenditure. We've got three operating mines, under 5% unemployment. Along with Alberta, we're tied for the lowest unemployment in Canada, as well as we're the only two jurisdictions. I thought it was only in Canada, but my colleague from Alberta indicated it may be in North America, jurisdictions who have no net debt as a jurisdiction. So we've come a long way. But where we are, we're only scratching the surface. I really took to heart some of the things your governor said in his speech yesterday about the opportunity for Alaska going forward, and very much Yukon is in the same place. We've only scratched the surface of our natural resources. We've got a number of, as a result of that exploration I mentioned, we've got a number of projects that are very exciting, very promising in terms of their ability to go forward to development. Some of them are in advanced permitting, some of them are just advanced exploration, but nonetheless very exciting. In any development, though, that we have, an integral partner is Alaska. With a number of our projects that exist currently, we ship our ore from under the ground in Yukon through the port of Skagway and out to markets outside, for Asia particularly. So our relationship with Alaska is very close. It's one that we certainly see as one that's going to advance as we continue to grow economically. Our projections indicate that Yukon's population and economy will continue to grow, furthering our need to develop and maintain a strong and competitive infrastructure to meet those projects. We see Alaska as a key partner in that, both on the energy side and the transportation side, as well as other links as well. Telecommunications is one. Yukon has an all-weather road system that is connected to Alaska, Alberta, British Columbia, and the Northwest Territories. Our highway system leads to tidewater access through Alaska and through British Columbia, which is a prerequisite to the viability of many of these resource developments in the territory which I mentioned. The government of Yukon is participating in the development of the Yukon Port Access Strategy with the Skagway Port Development Committee. And we believe this is an important step towards meeting Yukon's commitment to secure tidewater access in support of Yukon's resource industry. Resource development is an important foundation of Yukon's economy, as it is in Alaska. And access to the Skagway port is a major, major strategic advantage for us and for our export to the Asian market, which is the primary, not the primary, but it's an important target for our resources. As more Yukon resources advance to the production stage, our highway systems and availability to port access is crucial. The Alaska Highway is a fine example of transportation infrastructure, a Canada-U.S. collaboration of critical importance to both our jurisdictions. In many ways, the Alaska Highway is the land lifeline to the Southern 48 for you guys. It's important for us as well. So it's one that it's an example of collaboration where it's very important for us to work together. Sustainable energy is an important infrastructure element in any region, and for Yukon, it will meet our expanding population and economic growth. In our current grid system, we've very much met the max of our available power. So going forward, that's going to be an issue for us is finding new energy, and as the Minister of Environment, I have to throw in the caveat, we'd like to do clean energy where possible. The reality is that isn't always possible, and we don't want restrictions around greenness, I guess, to limit good projects going forward. But wherever possible, we'd like to have clean energy. Yukon has about 90% hydroelectricity right now. And we have what we think is a very promising natural gas deposits and body of resources in Yukon, which has never been really explored greatly. It's never come to fruition, I guess you'd say, as an industry. Something we think would be crazy to leave in the ground, I guess you'd say. UConn is very interested in providing input into the Alaska Energy Authority Southeast Alaska Integrated Resource Plan. We see this sort of planning as an instance where really we need to look beyond the border. What happens in Yukon affects Alaska, and what happens in Alaska affects Yukon. So when we do these sort of regional planning initiatives, we think it would be fantastic if you kept this in mind and consider the fact that the very promising developments in Yukon will inevitably have an effect on Alaska. So on planning exercises like that, we'd like to stay in touch. In the long term, we would like to be connected to the North American grid. We have an isolated grid right now. We see the possibility of linking into Alaska as a very real opportunity to fill that goal. We'd like to keep all options on the table, basically. A project connecting us to our southern grid through the province of British Columbia has been considered. It's very expensive and maybe a little bit long term. So we think that there's an opportunity to our west with Alaska. We think there could be an opportunity there. And that furthers the importance of that corridor between Whitehorse and Skagway. That's so important for currently for the transport of commodities and our resources, but possibly in the future for energy as well. As I said, expanding our energy infrastructure remains a priority for the Yukon government and will lead to the sustainable development and competitiveness of the Penmore region as a whole. An additional item in here is the access to reliable and affordable telecommunications services. For those living in and working in the Arctic regions, connectivity is absolutely important. Yukon is about 98% of Yukon homes and businesses are connected to high-speed internet. That's great, but we need to continue to develop those and to continue to develop that service. So redundancy, creating a redundant, getting those loops of redundancy going is very important. There's an option, I believe, that I think most of your telecommunications tends to go underwater. So if you guys were interested in having a land-based redundancy, I think Yukon would be a very attractive option for that. So keep us in mind. I'd like to speak a little, if I could, about your Alaska Northern Waters Task Force initiative. This is a very interesting endeavor for us to watch unfold. We have, as Senator McGuire outlined before, or Representative, I always confuse them, sorry. Senator McGuire outlined before, we've undergone a similar initiative with our Northern Territories. Minister Ramsey noted it a little bit as well. In 2007, we developed our Northern Vision. This was an initiative of the three territories working together to express a vision for the development of the North in Canada. A Northern Vision, a stronger North and a better Canada was the title. I don't know if it's available online if you'd like to have a look. It outlined, as the Senator McGuire noted, she quoted it actually directly, which was fantastic. Self-reliant individuals in a healthy, viable communities, Aboriginal rights successfully negotiated and implemented, Northerners as the primary beneficiaries of the resource development that we're experiencing, Northern traditions of respect for the land and the environment are cherished, strong, responsive governments make decisions and take actions that are anchored in the principles of responsible, sustainable development, and the cultural heritage of Aboriginal people is preserved. In Yukon, we have 14 First Nations, native bands, I guess you'd call them in Alaska, 11 of which are self-governing. They've reached final treaties with the Crown and have their own functioning self-governments. This is very important for us in terms of providing certainty to industry with the development of resource developments, because we know who has rights where and who has what land. There are lines on a map and they're very clear. It also helps our permitting system to be very streamlined and effective. The development of that Northern Vision document that I mentioned informed the federal government in the development of their higher-level federal Northern Strategy, which was based on four priority areas: exercising our Arctic sovereignty, protecting our environmental heritage, promoting social and economic development in the North, and improving and evolving Northern governance. So you can see that certainly our efforts resonated with the federal government, and a number of those were echoed. So that's something I think it may be, you know, something you could take from that as you guys are, as Alaska is undergoing these kind of initiatives, like the Alaska Northern Waters Task Force. Perhaps you could look to Canada and to the Northern Canada as an example of a similar initiative. We have a very positive relationship with our federal government and the existing administration. They've been very willing to invest in the North and look to the North for development and investment. It's been very beneficial to Yukon for sure. And having the ability to have our say in these sort of Arctic foreign policy developments is very important. So that's something I think would probably resonate with you folks as well. With respect to the Arctic Caucus items through PENWAR, Minister Ramsey, Matt Morrison, and Senator McGuire all did a good job of touching on some of these, so I'll be very brief with these. But as Minister Ramsey said, we're continuing to work with the Northwest Territories and Alaska to develop a joint resource inventory for infrastructure and opportunity, an opportunity map of the Arctic Caucus region, essentially. It would basically an Arctic map with all of our potential developments. And I think that when you look at the map and see the potential in Yukon, you begin to see how important that would be for Alaska, especially through that corridor with Skagway. They're intertwined, absolutely. Dr. Harvey Brooks, my DM, is working with ADA, the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, Deputy Director, to develop prospective models for an Arctic Infrastructure Development Authority. And Yukon, of course, will be reporting back at the June 2012 meeting of the Arctic Caucus on the Arctic Council tabletop results and recommendations for the next steps for the Arctic Caucus going forward. Returning to the telecommunications file, Yukon continues to work with Northwest Tel, our communication company in Yukon, to develop and create alignment on a common vision forward in terms of the Northern Region's telecom infrastructure supporting economic development, and this vision includes capitalizing on existing infrastructure and leveraging cross-jurisdictional opportunities. So once again, as I said before, there's an opportunity there for Alaska and Yukon to work together on many fronts. So I guess if I were to summarize, I'd say infrastructure, transportation, you've got the highway, potential for rail. On the energy side, the potential for interconnect there. We have a huge growing energy need in Yukon, driven by our natural resources sector that's growing exponentially, and we're looking for sources of clean power. Some of the developments in Skagway have an excess of clean power. We're very interested. Around telecommunications, the opportunity for Alaska to gain a land-based redundancy, Yukon is once again very interested in that as well. So. On behalf of my premier and my government, really looking forward to working with Alaska. We really see the opportunity, especially through PENWAR. PENWAR has been fantastic for Yukon in terms of building these relationships and fostering them. This is my first go-around with PENWAR, and I hope to be around for some time. I'm pretty young, so I think I might have a couple years ahead of me in this game. So I look forward to working with you all. Be happy to answer any questions you have about the Yukon, about the relationship between Alaska and Yukon, or the PENWAR Arctic Caucus.
Thank you, Minister. One comment and one question.
Sure.
I asked Don Humphrey to make a presentation to our broadband task force, and he surprised a lot of people of how far the Yukon, in some ways, is ahead of us. And so. Please tell him that I appreciate his presentation to that task force.
Absolutely.
And so the question is maybe a little off topic, but how long have you been a minister? How many days now?
Well, I had one of your we met with a number of senators yesterday and representatives, and afterwards one of the staff I was talking to a little informally, and he's, you know, I got to ask, how old are you? And I'm 26. I've been a minister for 3 months. I am the youngest minister in Yukon's history, the second youngest cabinet minister in Canadian history. So yeah, I am a little bit young, I guess, but you know, the people of Copper Belt North in my riding saw fit to elect me to represent them, and the premier saw fit to trusts me with managing the Departments of Economic Development and Environment, so I think I'll do my best to do that in a capable and responsible way. So that may answer your question, I guess.
Well, here's the question. Of course, you had, as a candidate, you probably had visions of what would happen after you got elected. Now that you are elected, what surprised you?
Well, I've worked in the political office for a number of years. I started in the summer of 2006, doing something, I guess, akin to an internship, I guess you'd say, in the office of the cabinet office. And since then, I sort of advanced through the ranks, and I've been there on and off since about 2006. So pretty familiar with the process and how everything works. It's the political process, right? I have a master's in political science as well, so I know how it looks in the books, at least. Mm-hmm. A little bit different than the way it works here. I thought I knew the Alaska system in and out before I came here, and then I found out I don't know half as much as I thought I knew. You guys have coalitions and stuff that I didn't know about, so it's been informative for me in terms of learning how you folks operate your system, and I think it'll be informative for many Alaska legislators as well to learn about how we operate in the Yukon and the Northwest Territories. They're all very different. As David mentioned, or Minister Ramsey mentioned before, the Northwest Territories operates on a consensus model. It's very different from the Yukon. The Yukon's on a political party model, the traditional Westminster model based on the United Kingdom system. So I think that improving our understanding of our neighbors is very important, and that's why I'm happy to be here and happy to work with all of you going forward.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, we have three more presenters today. Two more presenters, and then I'll ask our VIP from Alberta to make a few closing remarks. Debbie, could you please note for the record that Representative Sharon Sista and Senator Kathy Giesel have joined us several minutes ago. So at this time, Larry, could you please come forward, state your name for the record, and your portion of the update.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the opportunity to speak before you and members of the committee today. My name is Larry Dietrich. I'm Director of the Division of Spill Prevention and Response for the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation. If I may continue then?
Please go ahead.
I will point to, I believe there should be a handout in your packet here, and I will walk through those slides, and if you have that, you can refer to that. First of all, I would like to thank the Chairman and Senator McGuire for their leadership in involving Alaska at a government-to-government level with our Canadian partners. I'm more specifically going to be talking about action item 90, number 6, and this came out of the Yellowknife meeting that has been noted here by previous speakers, which occurred on August 20th. Action item number 6 on slide number 2 created, coming out of Yellowknife, an Arctic State Territorial Oil Spill Task Force to educate, share information, collaborate, and coordinate oil spill planning, preparedness, and response in the Arctic. So that's the action item that was taken. The designated representatives to this oil spill task force are Brian Love, Peter Vishen, and Larry Dietrich, myself, and we're the designated representatives on this task force. Turning then to slide number 3. We've had a number of discussions to determine how to move forward on this action item, and they resulted then in our first meeting by teleconference on November 16th. Those are the participants that participate in the teleconference. And at that meeting, we tried to frame up then how we would move forward on this specific action item. I threw in these slides here. I'm happy to report that the RENDA completed pump off of the fuel this morning at 6:24 a.m. So we've had a successful completion. And those photos are, the smaller one actually is the Russian tanker, the RENDA, and the larger one is the Healy. And I'm sure you've probably seen those in the media. So we're happy that has been brought to a successful completion. The agenda items then on slide 4 that we queued up for our discussions was to review and discuss the implementation of action item number 6, verify our official points of contacts, share information, and then discuss how we can move forward efficiently to collaborate, share information, and I think down the road then identify those areas of cooperation where we might formulate recommendations that we would then elevate up to the larger Arctic Caucus body for their consideration. Slide number five. This is just a summary. Our first discussion was very interesting, and one thing that we took note of in terms of how to move forward was to establish a foundation. There's a lot of diversity between Northwest Territories, Yukon, and Alaska, both in our jurisdictional responsibilities, our programs, how we're organized, how we're set up, different responsibilities, different jurisdictional areas of coverage for oil spill response offshore. And so we took note of that, and I thought that was fairly significant. Because of those diversities, everybody wants to be efficient. We want to identify the areas of common interest that we can focus on and perhaps leverage then our influence by three territories on this particular topic. And so I think there's a good realization that we are going to take into account these different organizational differences, yet we still have, I think, a very strong foundation for how to move forward by identifying those things and where we will collaborate in this arena. The outcome of our meeting, then, we did agree then to continue on recognizing those differences. We will have a spring teleconference, and that will be to discuss then future items of interest and how to collaborate, continue exchanging our basic information and understanding of our programs and differences, and then cue that up then to put us in a position to deal with, I think, ultimately the PennWAR goal, which is resource development and economic development in this region. And clearly, the Arctic resource development is a very big, the economics of that are very large, and the offshore oil and gas exploration development is a very significant thing. So with that in mind, on the last slide on page slide number seven, here are some of the things we think that are going to shake out from our deliberations as items for which we may want to identify how to leverage each other's influences in moving forward. And it's been mentioned to date, the Arctic Council clearly is one of them. There are essentially three things going on right now in the Arctic Council. There is a task force on oil spill preparedness response that is developing a draft mutual aid instrument as we speak. U.S., Russia, and Norway have the chairmanship for this project. They're on the second draft. The goal is to have it completed by the end of this calendar year for signing by the ministers in 2013. This will be a very significant agreement among the eight Arctic nations, and the next meeting is will be held in Anchorage on March 2021 and 2022. The second Arctic Council project is a best prevention practices, and that's also being taken on by a work group. This is on dealing with marine oil pollution, and we'll focus on shipping and offshore oil and gas development and land-based development sources. The third item then under the Arctic Council that's on a continuing basis is the Emergency Prevention and Preparedness Working Group. That's a standing working group of the Arctic Caucus. They have an agenda of items, and they will continue to work on those as time goes on. They meet regularly then to deal with various spill prevention, preparedness, and response issues. These next three items then are three of the some of the field activities that are going on. CAN US North 2012 is a drill planning exercise for next summer, and this is anticipation of Beaufort Sea drilling by Shell. If things move forward, we'll have drilling operations in both the Chukchi and the Beaufort. The CAN US North is done under a bilateral agreement with the US and Canada. The planning efforts have already started for that, then to conduct an exercise or a drill or a tabletop that's yet to be determined then on the Beaufort, on our shared border, to test and flesh out then issues with cross-border movement of resources, identifying response resource inventories and those kinds of things. On the Alaska side, we're also going to have an Arctic Shield offshore drill scheduled for this summer. And there's yet an additional Alaska North Slope mutual aid drill that will be conducted. And then there's a number, quite a few, what I would call readiness exercises being conducted with Shell, so that all systems are very highly tuned by the time drilling operations start this summer. Another significant event has been the National Energy Board report. They regulate offshore drilling on the Canadian side. They've completed a fairly substantial report with regard to drilling safety, and that was a precursor now for drilling leases and activities to occur on the Canadian side. And perhaps our partners from Canada here can update us on that, but we understand there is interest now on part of industry to move forward on the Beaufort now that that report has been completed. The Northern Waters Task Force, another significant effort by the Alaska Legislature. As Mr. Chairman, you've indicated, that report will be available tomorrow. So substantial effort there, substantial information in that report on a whole host of Arctic issues. I would also note the University of Alaska Fairbanks has applied for a Science and Technology Center for Oil Spill Prevention and Preparedness in the Arctic. They made it through the first round. They're in the finalists now. So they are have polishing up now their the next submittal that they have to make in a competition for becoming a center of excellence then in Alaska for spill prevention response. And if they are successful, that will be a significant step forward for the state of Alaska, I believe. As I've already mentioned, offshore drilling, we're poised to move forward this summer in on the Alaska side in both the Chukchi and the Beaufort. These are new. You would think this is a new activity when you read about it in the papers, but we have completed 70 wells off Alaska's north coast to date successfully. We have four offshore drilling operations that have been in operation for quite some time. So we're confident that things hopefully will be successful this summer and there'll be a successful outcome there. Shipping is another issue. As the Northwest Passage and the Northern Sea Route, which are already coming through the Northern Sea Route, which is along the Russian coast, move forward, the response capability is necessary for vessels in innocent passage and transiting the northern waters will be a common issue, I think, with us and the other territories. The International Maritime Organization is developing a polar code, which is design characteristics for vessels transiting the Arctic for operating in ice, and so that's another effort that's underway. Last but not least, we're also updating the government sub-area plans, what they're called, for the Chukchi and the Beaufort Sea Coast, again, in anticipation of being ready then for drilling in the summer. And with that, Mr. Chairman, that concludes. I put the websites on the back sheet for you. The reports that were done in Yellowknife were, overviews were all excellent. There's a ton of information there, and I would encourage you all to look at the PENWAR website. They have both the working groups and all the presentations from Barrow and Yellowknife there, and it's a considerable amount of information. Thank you very much.
Yeah, Larry, just one comment is that obviously DEC gets a bad rap from some, but during the Northern Waters Task Force sessions, yourself and your boss did bring times of clarity and a lot of oh-I-get-it moments, so please pass that along to your boss.
I appreciate that.
Any questions for Larry Dietrich from the committee? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, next up, the two more to go. Colin Smith. Sir, please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Colin Smith. I'm representing the Professional Engineers and Geoscientists of British Columbia as a delegate to PINWAR. And just by way of initial introduction, Mr. Chair, the power of PINWAR is that it is a partnership between the public sector and the private sector. And the private sector is invited to be involved in all of PINWAR's activities. At the executive committee level, for example, the Canadian and American counterparts from the private sector are members of the executive committee. And as importantly, the 14 working groups within PINWAR are all co-chaired by a legislator and a private sector co-chair. And so it's a very powerful opportunity to bring together the interests of both in a very open and frank dialogue without any filtering going on. And so it really makes PINWAR a very powerful organization. last August in Yellowknife has already been referenced. Resolution number 16, the Workforce Committee was tasked with looking at employment training opportunities for Northerners. And in my representation with PINWAR, I'm the private sector co-chair of the Workforce Development Group. And this is an issue that is of great interest to all of the jurisdictions of PINWAR. and particularly in the north, and but wherever there's rural communities, we have, as we had in discussions yesterday with Senator DeGiesel, issues of remote communities where employment opportunities are scarce, and yet everybody's connected to the internet, and so they see what the glamour of the, you know, the real world out there somehow. And so the need to ensure that young people complete high school so that they have at least the recognized basic opportunity for entry into either skilled trades or to go on to a post-secondary education is there for them. And that's an ongoing challenge in all of our jurisdictions. Senator McGuire made reference previously to the to some of the work that was done back in 2008 and 2009, where PINRA did some significant studies looking at how the thousands of required skilled workers and professionals would be identified and sourced if the Alaska Pipeline project had gone ahead. And as we're hearing currently with the Keystone decision yesterday or the day before, the and now the and with Governor Parnell making reference to a potential the gas line to Valdez, there may be pipeline in Alaska construction, and so this will continue to be a significant issue. So the work that the Workforce Committee was asked to do would certainly build on this earlier work that was done, and I can assure you that it will remain a topic of high interest to PINRA and all of that it's doing. I would, if I might, just take a moment to advise the committee on one initiative that that the Workforce Committee is pursuing within PINRA. Currently, there are some 60,000 vacancies of skilled workers needed for the oil sands projects. And within Canada, it is a very cumbersome process to import foreign workers. Individual company, it's a one-off process, so a company has to go to the government, demonstrate the need, go through the whole process, and then go out and retain workers. What PINRA has offered to do under the Beyond the Border initiative that President Obama and Prime Minister Harper have signed is to look at a pilot project where we would identify a pool of workers of 500 to 1,000 workers, whereby employers would come together under a joint MOU. We would work with the unions to get certification issues sorted out. And then there would be a pool of binationally certified skilled workers that could come from the United States to help fill those vacancies currently in northern Alberta. One of the companies there has imported workers from Alaska, skilled trades workers, again having gone through this cumbersome process. So we're hoping that this pilot will demonstrate the benefits to both countries of being able to have workers go where the work is, with a goal obviously down the road that if economies change and the need is in the United States to have Canadian workers as opportunity, then it would be reciprocal. So we're quite excited about that. We've had a series of meetings in Ottawa when we were there recently, and the federal department involved is encouraging us to go forward. We're having meetings next week with the Western Regional representatives in Vancouver to further this, and so you'll be hearing more about that as we go forward. And I think ultimately it will have benefit for opportunities in Alaska. And if I might just take a couple of more moments, one of the other things that that we are working on and have been working on for some dozen years now is having is obtaining throughout the PINRA region credential recognition for professional engineers. Currently, and since NAFTA, but we don't use NAFTA as an argument because it doesn't apply always. American engineers' credentials are recognized in Canada. The reciprocal doesn't work because only the state of Texas is a signatory to the NAFTA treaty. And so it remains for us to be working individually, state by state, to see that happen. And we'll be meeting with the State Board of Registration tomorrow to further that initiative. Alaska currently is halfway there. There's two major 8-hour exams that are typically required. The first of those has been waived in Alaska for some time. We'll meet with him tomorrow about the second one. One last thing that is a new initiative that is just in the process of being developed is to develop a roster of disaster resilience experts, acknowledged experts, binationally. The initial proposal will be to work this through between BC and Washington State. And the reason for that is that it was experienced after the Chilean and North New Zealand earthquakes that once the disaster has occurred, the economy remains paralyzed for a very long time afterwards because it is uncertain whether it is safe to reuse infrastructure or buildings because there haven't been enough people, experts brought in who are recognized as experts to say it's safe to go back and use that building. So let's get that business back in business and so on and get the economy going again. So the concept here would be is that there would be experts from both countries on this roster. And if a disaster happened in Seattle, or first example, the Canadians on that roster would get expedited process into Washington State. They could go in and inspect and certify a building just as their American colleagues could and assist in getting the economy up and running again. And I foresee that if we can bring this about, that it would be only natural to involve Alaska and Oregon and California and have a coastal a roster such that we could help each other in the times of great need. So we think that could be very beneficial as well in the future. So it's been a pleasure to have the opportunity to say a few words in front of your committee, and we wish you well, and we certainly, from the private sector side, will be supporting PINWARE in its Arctic initiatives, and we applaud PINWARE for starting that. We think that's great merit for the future.
I appreciate it. Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your presentation and sharing information. I'm curious about this roster of experts and the expedited consideration for being able to cross the border to work. It seems to me that that would be something that would have to be done through the federal government, not the state.
Correct. And okay. And the impetus for that is something like the enhanced driver's license, where, mm-hmm. again, the idea was conceived within PINWARE between BC and Washington. And both federal governments said it'll never happen. It just will not happen. Well, it has happened. And so I think if we put together a compelling case, then we can take that to our Canadian officials and to the Department of Homeland Security, and we can have the federal government support it. But you're correct. There's the 49th parallel. It's a big border between us. Right?
Okay, thank you. If I might, Mr. Chair. So there's already a template in place, and we just could potentially apply to use the same template.
Yes, there's certainly the examples in place, and you're quite right. And I think if the state and provincial jurisdictions sorted out, then it would make sense for the federal governments to say this is a good idea.
Thank you.
And it would be, the goal would be is that they would be like first responders, which is another initiative. If the border had to be closed because of a disaster of some kind, that there would be a nexus-like lane would be open so that these identified people could cross the border immediately to be of use to each other. So.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks for your presentation as well. I'm an electrician by trade, a member of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, and this last year we had our international convention. We have it once every 5 years. And we were fortunate enough to have it in Vancouver, B.C., beautiful city, very welcoming. And what makes us an international union is the partnership between the United States and Canada. And it's interesting to hear you say about trying to make sure our workforce is able to cross the borders and be able to assist and help one another. One of the problems that we've been having in the electrical industry is exactly that. I mean, we have no problem with Canadians being able to come over here and work in the United States, but we've been really having a hard time allowing electricians into Canada, or Canada allowing electricians over there to be able to meet their workforce needs. And I know in Alberta, I talked to a couple of business agents that are from the Alberta area, and how they really want to open up the opportunities for Alaskans to come over, because one of the things that they find is that people from southern states, if you will, really aren't acclimated to be able to work in those areas and don't last very long when they get up there. And so I hope we continue to be able to make those possibilities not only available for Canadians to come over here, but for Americans to go over there as well. And I understand you're having some problems with the engineering community and everything else, but and then also as we work in partnership with Alaska and Canada, that we also remember, and well, we remember Canada, but please remember the United States also as you do your presentations. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Tuck, and if I might, Mr. Chair, I think the comments are right on point, and the both the employers and the unions have indicated, and we know that the Canadian process is extremely bureaucratic, and this is what we're trying to break through, so that it would end up being facilitated in both directions, reciprocal.
PENWAR is the excellent tool that we can use. Okay.
So thank you again, Mr. Chair and members of the committee.
Okay, we're nearly out of time, but we got a couple minutes, and I would extend the courtesy to an elected official from Alberta, George Grenfell. Could you please come forward? Please state your name for the record and your affiliation.
I'm George Grenfell, the MLA for Alberta government, and my constituency is south of Calgary. And so I certainly thank you for this opportunity to bring greetings from Alberta. Didn't expect it. That's why I was in the comfortable pew at the back. But, I quite appreciate it. Alberta's not necessarily a part of the Arctic Caucus, but we always try and have someone at the Arctic Caucus meetings to have our finger on what's going on with the Arctic Caucus, because we extend quite far north ourselves in Alberta, and of course a lot of our energy is up there. Just from Alberta, and I know time's limited, we have a new premier in Alberta. Her name's Alison Redford, so we have a lady premier. We now have three lady premiers in Canada, which is, I think, very encouraging. And I think probably she will probably call an election very quickly to get her own mandate and move on from there. Just a few comments, I guess, I'd like to make maybe about PENWAR. We know that the federal government's President Obama and Prime Minister Harper are talking about beyond the borders, and there's one other one that escapes my mind. It's about different policies between the two governments, whatever it's called. I think this is where PENWAR is a useful tool, because I think we can react very quickly to what that means and the implications it has on our different areas, because we're a pretty tight-knit group, and we meet as much as we do, and we have the infrastructure in place to quickly respond to this. So I think we're at PENWAR has a real role to play. I applaud them for doing what they're doing, but sometimes there's unintended consequences that need to be addressed a little quicker than we would like. When I came to Alaska, my first trip to Alaska, by the way, better come back and see what it looks like in the summertime. It's probably a little warmer than it has been in the last couple of days. But I was greeted, we were greeted, and I'm sorry, David Kettles is here with me at the back from Intergovernmental Affairs, and he's responsible for our U.S. international relationship. We were greeted on Tuesday morning with the news about the Keystone Pipeline, which was a bit of a shock to us, and I think I kind of appreciated the fact my colleagues here in Alaska shared a little bit of that shock as well. And I guess it's changed the game a little bit. And, of course, you know we're talking about the Gateway pipeline coming out perhaps to Kitimat, B.C. And at that in that time when we got some hiccups where at Nebraska and the Prime Minister said, we do have other markets out there. And so we thought that was solved. So maybe, I guess, speaking for myself, I was a little bit shocked the way it came out now. At any rate, there's one thing maybe I'd comment here. In my time here in Juneau, there's been some talks about perhaps a pipeline to to Valdez, I believe. I think that's something we invented at this meeting, and I don't want to perpetuate that rumor. So that's a rumor start. So maybe when we go back home, we'll get slapped at that. But so, although it's a thought, I think maybe, you know, it's... the game's changed now. We know. I think I wanted, you know, as I said, I wasn't with the Arctic Caucus as such, but I wanted to tag along because Alaska and Alberta have so much in common, and it's with the energy, the resources, and pipelines that we struggle to move forward with. So, I just it's always a good to sit with the other legislators and just get the feeling of what's in the room, and I really appreciate that. So with that, I think probably thank you for inviting me up here. If there's any questions, we talked. Colin Smith talked about our labor problems in Alberta. Indeed, we're short about 60,000 skilled laborers right now. Our unemployment rate is at 4.9%, which is virtually just unskilled laborers. So it is an issue for us there, and hopefully we can solve it. So thank you very much for letting me have a few words. If there's any questions, I will endeavor to answer.
Okay. Oh, I guess we do have one question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Tuck.
It's nice to have those type of problems, low unemployment and need of workforce. How are you guys doing for housing? How's the housing situation? I can imagine that probably if there's I don't know if I've seen how fast Alberta's grown industrially so quick. Is there still housing opportunities for workers out there?
Well, there is, and of course, in the oil sands area, the big companies they fly people habitually in and out. You know, in for 2 weeks, out for 2 weeks, and they've got the big housing projects to move people in and out and Fort McMurray itself is just growing by leaps and bounds. Housing is a bit of a problem. It's expensive proposition for housing in that particular area. Yeah. No doubt it's putting a strain on our whole infrastructure, to be honest with you.
Okay,
thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Okay, again, appreciate the presentation by the Pinoir delegation. Large shout out for Senator McGuire, thank you. And just a little bit of housekeeping for my committee members. The next meeting is next Thursday, the 26th. And that's when we'll bring up a resolution concerning the 2011 Norway policy tour. So with that, Debbie, we're out of here at 11.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to make a quick note here while Larry Dietrich was here. I just wanted to thank the ADEC for everything that they did in assisting to get the fuel out to Western Alaska there. We certainly appreciate that. So thank you much.
An attaboy from the entire committee. Thank you. We're out of here at 11:46.